Now I grew up down an old dirt road in a town you wouldn't know. I still live in the sticks where you wouldn't go, in a town of 1200 off an old dirt road, and a country boy is all I'll ever be.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Mountain Man Dan Show. Been a little bit crazy this week, but I'm going to try to keep this weekly update short, as I think the main part of the episode will take up a fair amount of time. Last week, I talked about that old Poulon chainsaw a little bit. I did end up fitting a Husqvarna 372 recoil spring to that saw and got it running. So now I need to decide what I want to do with it. I won't really run it that much as a firewood chainsaw, but that could I have better saws. So I can either hot rod it or I can sell it. Not really sure which way I'm going to go with that. I'm kind of leaning towards selling it, since I'm a Husky guy. I'm partial to hunt, Husqvarna chainsaws, and I have several other saws on the workbench. Project saws. I've got a Johnson Red 670 that I've been working on building and hot rodding. I've got the Franken 365 I'm working on. Got quite a few saws that I like a lot better than that old Poulon. So I'm not sure what I'm going to do with it yet. I might find a collector and sell it to somebody that would appreciate it more than I would. I also ran the old K5 Jimmy a bit more this week. When I wrote this, I thought the distributor was what was causing a misfire. And I wasn't staying in time. The truck was running would run good for a bit and then start to run crappy and be low on power and go back to running good and back and forth. And I was going to, like I said, when I first started writing the script, I thought it was the distributor, but I actually ended up working on the truck a little bit here last week, and I pulled all the spark plugs to test compression, because I knew that number 7, or that number 8 cylinder was low on compression on it, and I thought maybe it had gone out the rest of the way, or I was losing compression on the other cylinder, so I checked all the cylinders, and I only had 70 pounds of compression. And I was like, well, that's weird, 65, 70 pounds. So I pulled the spark plug out of the Suburban I just got done rebuilding, and it had, 68 pounds. So I was like, well, that's not right, so I'm pretty sure my compression tester is no good. So I put ahead and put the spark plugs all back in it. When I was putting the spark plug wires back on, I noticed there was, some ash on the outside of one. So I pulled all the spark plug wires off, and I bought them online. I forget where I got them from, but they were some aftermarket spark plug wires that were supposed to be pretty good. At least I thought they were supposed to be pretty good. And they were burning up from the inside. So I went down to Napa and got a set of spark plug wires that were about 2 feet too long. They said they were for a 350, and I'm not going to go there. Napa here is kind of a pain in the ass. But anyway, I put those spark plug wires on, and boom, fired up, running great. So I got that going for me. I plowed my driveway, and then the alternator went out. So going to be dealing with that this week. And then I went and looked at a road grader project this week. The road grader, the blades, it's probably my favorite thing to run out on the job site. That's kind of what I do for a living these days. So as I'm trying to acquire my own equipment for my company, a road grader is pretty high on the list, even though I'm not doing anything that big. I'm still really wanting to get a road grader, so it's pretty high on the list of things I want to get. I think, I'm not 100% sure, I went and looked at this grader, and the cowling and everything's off of it, so I'm not 100% sure, but just by looking at it, I think it's a late 50s or early 60s Cat Model 12E, which is, that's the first model, I think that was the first model Cat built that was a sit-in machine, it had an actual seat. Before that they had cabs, but they didn't have seats, you stood in them and ran them. So I think that the 12E, or right in there somewhere, was the first machine that had seats in them. And if you look at them, they actually got a bench seat in the back that's not really, they're still kind of designed, all the clutches and everything are all designed so you can still run them standing up. But kind of the grandfather of the modern grader, full manual controls. So it has these little drive shafts with about 200 U-joints running everywhere to run the tilt and all that kind of stuff, run the circle and all that. It's all out to the steering, all little tiny drive shafts, almost no hydraulics on it. So, but they're good old machines. Those old wrist breaker machines are a little harder to run. If everything's adjusted right, they work pretty good, but they can take you for a, make you feel pretty worn out by the end of the day if they're not adjusted right, but it's better than no grader. So, but the bad thing about this one, I went and looked at it, it's missing the engine. But the rest of the machine's in really good shape. Really good shape. The price is right, so I was thinking about picking it up. This one appears to have come with the Pony Motor starting system, so I think it would have been a Cat D17. But you know, if I put a new engine in, I might put a D317 or a D333 in it with electric start. You know, and that engine's like 115 horsepower. That D17, I think the 317 was 110, and the 333 was 115. I might be mistaken on that, but I need to do a little bit of research on it. I'm thinking I might try to adapt the 12 valve Cummins to it, and you know, like a 5.9 instead of trying to locate one of the old Cat motors. They're getting kind of hard to find. You can get a brand new one from, or a remanned one from Cat for about $9,000, but it might be cheaper to find something else and adapt it to it. And then, you know, if I go with newer small engines like that, you know, I could convert it all to electric, like 12 volt, you know, and for electric start and lights and all that kind of stuff. I got to do a little more research on that, because I think those graders, I think the 12E was like one of the first ones to have a wet clutch in them. And the wet clutches on the grader, even though it's the same, basically the same engine between the grader and other stuff that used that 317, 333 engine family, I think the grader had a wet clutch that shared oil with the engine. And if that's the case, I'm not going to be able to just grab any engine off the street and go with it. So I got to do a little research on that. It might end up being more of a project that I'm really looking to get into. I'm waiting on word on a couple of other ones to go look at, and we'll see where that goes. But anyway, you know, if I end up picking it up, it should make for a fun project, and you know, it should be a good usable machine once it's fixed up and working. And like I said, if this one falls through, I've got a couple of others I am looking at as well. Ideally, I'd really like to find like a Champion 740 or something, you know, hydraulic with articulation. But we'll have to see what my budget will allow. You know, I'm trying to build up my company by, and I'm like, even when I bought my truck this last time, I buy stuff that needs work and I fix it. I'm not gonna go out and spend, you know, $80,000 on a machine if I can put 10 into a used one and do the same thing. But I'm not making that much money with it. I'm, you know, grading a few roads here and there, mainly for keeping my road graded. It's really what I'd like it for. But I mean, I would make money with it, you know, putting in driveways and that kind of stuff. It would be handy to have, but it's not going to be a huge money maker. So I can't invest, you know, $35,000-$40,000 into a machine right now. I also picked up a new rifle that we will talk about just a little bit today, a Tika. It's a Tika T1X left-handed model in 17 HMR. I've got a couple other Tika rifles. I really like them, but I've never had a 17 HMR. So I figured I'd give this one a try. It was a pretty good deal. I grabbed the rifle and 6 boxes of 17 grain Hornady VMAX ammo and some worn 11mm rings. I think I was all in for about $650 right in there somewhere. And then I mounted a Vortex Crossfire 2 scope on it, that 3-9 that I had laying around. And it should be an interesting little rifle. At the time I wrote this, I hadn't shot it a whole lot. I have shot it a little bit by now. But we're probably going to do a review on it in for the podcast here in the next couple weeks. So I'm not going to talk about it too much right now. Okay, guys. No cigar this week. I haven't gotten any feedback, good or bad, on the subject on this segment of the show. But I'm just not smoking a cigar tonight since I'm recording at the house. However, with it being Sunday, I did smoke some fake meat today. No, not tofu or any of the other poison. The only fake meat in our house is chicken. I much prefer a good red meat, but the wife likes chicken, so I stuck some chicken on the Traeger tonight. My usual method for cooking whole chickens, and I can't really say whole chickens because what I do is I split them in half right down the middle, down the breastbone, in the back. But, and you know, I'm sure I could spatchcock it, but splitting it all the way down the center of the breast and the back bone all the way through makes it a lot easier to handle. And then I can season the two halves different. Since sometimes, you know, sometimes my wife wants barbecue sauce and I don't, or I want barbecue sauce and she doesn't, and I like mine a little spicy and she doesn't, you know, whatever. We have our differences in opinions somehow on how we want our dinner. So doing them separate like that, I can kind of season them individually for whose half of the chicken it's going to be. Tonight, I was lazy, and I just used some store-bought rubs. Anytime I barbecue ribs, chicken, whatever, I like to layer the flavors. So I rubbed, I rubbed the whole bird, you know, the halves, I guess half, not whole bird, but I rubbed the halves down with olive oil. And then I gave them a good sprinkle of Traeger, their Traeger fin and feather rub. And then I followed that by a lighter sprinkle of the original Traeger rub. And then I put them in the smoker, or in the Traeger, it's not really a smoker, but the pellet grill, the smoker, Traeger, for about 2.5 hours at 225. And I'm just running Costco brand, their blended pellets. Kind of hard to get pellets up here, especially in the winter, and the Costco ones are half the price of anywhere else, and I've been fairly happy with them. I'm doing something special, like a brisket or rib. Sometimes I'll use the fancier Traeger brand or some other brand to get some nice, but for general, the Costco brand works fine. And that's all tonight. We're just making dinner for us. So I've now 2.5 hours at 225, and then I sauced them up with some Stubbs brand sticky sweet barbecue sauce. And I kicked the temperature up to 350, and I did them for 20 minutes, and it was just a hair too long. You know, 15 probably would have been fine, but I like to kick that temperature up for the last little bit while it kind of makes that, you know, sets the sauce on the meat, and I like to, it gives the, makes the skin a little bit crispier. I ended up leaving them in there like 20 or 25 minutes, and I left them in there a little longer than they should have been. I wasn't expecting the Traeger to hold temperature very good because it was down below zero today. So in the summer, I'd probably go like 10 or 15 minutes at 350, but it takes a while for the temperature to come up to temp, you know, in these temps, and I don't wait for it to come, I don't take the chicken off and wait for it to come up to temp and put it back on. I kick it up to 350, sauce them, and then close the lid. And they were just a little bit overcooked, but we had some mashed potatoes and cornbread with them, and there was no leftovers. Both chicken halves were gone between me and the wife. And I've got to say real quick, there was a little bit of a lie at the top of that segment, or the beginning of this segment, because when I wrote the script for this, we were sitting there watching a movie, and I was planning on recording at the house, and then I remembered that the microphone that I used for recording was over at the shop. So I went over to the shop to grab the microphone, and I figured, screw it, if I'm going to walk over to the shop, I'm going to go ahead and record at the shop, which isn't really the best spot for recording because of how big and open the shop is. There's a lot of background echo, and it's not the best audio quality, but it is quieter than at the house, so it's kind of a win-lose-win, however you want to say it. But because I am recording at the shop, I am actually smoking a cigar tonight, and I'm smoking a CAO Columbia, and I'm not going to talk about it too much. It's not one of my favorite cigars. You know, it's a cigar. That's not the worst cigar I've ever had, but it's not one I would buy again on purpose. I bought a sampler pack. It was like a CAO factory tour sampler pack. I buy a lot of my cigars in sampler packs. If there's a cigar I really like the, you know, Flathead 660 or something like that, I'll buy a box of them. But you know, generally I buy samplers because it's cheaper. You can buy, or I buy mixed bags, and the samplers are a lot cheaper. So this one came in a sampler that I bought. It's not one of my favorites, not a terrible cigar. It's in the same series as like that CAO America, which I do like that cigar, where it's made with, you know, Colombian tobacco, whatever country, like the Italia is made with Italian tobacco and yada yada yada. So this was made with Colombian tobacco. Not my favorite, not the worst cigar I've ever had. But I did lie at the start of this segment because I am actually smoking a cigar tonight, and I figured I would mention that. Alrighty, here we go. Main topic. Before I get started on this topic, just let me say something first. I know that most of the Jeff Cooper fans and Scout Rifle enthusiasts are very opinionated that the concept should not be messed with. And I want to say that I respect that opinion. However, the Scout Rifle concept was born 40 plus years ago, and things have changed a little bit since then. I don't want to step on any toes with this series, but I do want to explain my take on the Scout Rifle. And as I've been doing a little bit of research on this subject, it is, you know, from when I first wrote the script to now when I'm recording, my opinions are changing a little bit just reading about it. And we'll talk about that a little bit later in the show, and then in a later episode, we'll really get into my take versus the act, you know, building a Scout Rifle the way it's supposed to be built according to Jeff Cooper's standard. Anyway, you know, and when I wrote this script, I was saying it's just a concept. So in my eyes, there's no final answer to the question of what the perfect Scout Rifle is. Everybody's going to have different needs, different opinions of how the Scout Rifle should be built. I'm going to try to do this in a 3-part series, and depending on how it goes, it may end up being like a 5-part series or even more. You know, I'm finding, like I said, as I started researching the subject, there's really a lot more to this Scout Rifle concept than I initially thought there was. I've never built one before. I've handled them, I've shot them, I've never built one, And the more I research it, the more I'm finding it there's a little more involved than just the forward mounted scope and the backup irons and that kind of stuff. These guys they're very particular about how the scout rifles are built. So this may end up being more than the original three part series that I wanted to do. But anyway, these parts will not all be in consecutive episodes because of time and budget. So you'll just have to keep listening to the show for the next parts. You know, if I'm going to build an actual scout rifle, you know, I pay for everything on the show right now out of pocket. I don't have any sponsors. So I'm going to have to save up $1,000, buy an action. I'm going to have to buy it. You know, if I end up building one from scratch, I'm going to have to buy an action. I'm going to have to buy a stock. I'm going to have to buy a barrel. I'm going to have to get a barrel vise and some stuff to put it back, you know, to put it together. Or I'm going to have to send it off and have it assembled, you know, have the machine work and that kind of stuff done. So it's going to be a bit of a space between the episodes on this series. So yeah, you'll just have to keep listening to the show for the next parts. The plan is to do this first episode on the scout rifle concept and my current thoughts on it and the caliber options. The next episode I want to do after this one is I want to build a scout rifle to Jeff Cooper's specs. And then a final part after I'll modify the rifle. After using it, I will modify it to what I think the scout rifle should be at this point in time or after using it some, you know, to my specs after using the rifle. And then we'll go over kind of some final thoughts on the series. I'm starting to hunt for a platform for my scout rifle build. The scout rifle is supposed to be kind of a general purpose rifle. And 308 seems to be the go-to caliber. I like the 308. And I would like to build my scout rifle in 308. However, it's not a caliber that I can use and shoot a lot year-round. And I can go out and shoot a 308 all day long. But I'm not really going to go small game hunting with a 308 and stuff like that. So for up here, with no real-world use where I can actually go out and use it, I'm debating building the rifle in either to like 22 mag, doing like a Cub Scout, I think those guys call them when they build them in rimfires. You know, to use it for small game hunting and maybe running on the trap line or maybe possibly a 223. It was actually during this hunt that I came across this Tika T1X 17 HMR that I bought. And I may use that as my initial test platform, but I would rather have a 22 mag. But it's proven kind of hard to find a left-handed one without a bull barrel. And if I do build the rifle on a smaller caliber than 308, I may build a full-size scout rifle to add to the series based on my final testings and thoughts and, you know, whatever. So we'll just kind of have to see how this goes. You guys can feel free to chime in with what you think the initial build should be. And you can email thoughts and ideas to dansgunstuff@gmail.com. So with all that being said, let's get into the show. Let's start with exactly what a scout rifle is. Jeff Cooper built his first scout rifle in 1968 on a Remington Mohawk M600 308. From what I've read and from what I can remember, he initially left it with just iron sights, and then he found I think it was a Bushnell long eye relief scope. And then finally he ended up putting topping the rifle with a two-power loophole scope mounted forward of the action on a custom-made mount. He dubbed the word Scout after the Army Scout and built the rifle to be a general all-purpose rifle. In his book, The Art of the Rifles, Cooper talks about the ideal cartridge for the scout rifle being .30-06. But the 308 being just as good and able to be used on a short action rifle, and it seems to just kind of become the golden standard cartridge for the scout rifles. The second rifle he built was built on a Seiko action, and I believe this is the one that he showed to the people from Steyr when they were at Gunsight that led to the development of the scout rifle after, you know, they had several meetings from the time that they originally seen that Seiko rifle and seen that they said that they really liked it to the time that Steyr came out with their rifle in, I think, like 1998. You know, it was, I think it was over 10 years that they spent, you know, talking about and developing that Steyr scout rifle, trying to get everything right about it. Initially drawing inspiration from several sources, specifically the 1903 Mannlicher and the Winchester Model 1894, Cooper defined several distinguishing characteristics about a scout rifle. The caliber, a standard chambering of .308 Winchester or 7mm 08 Remington for countries that forbid civilian ownership of cartridges and chamberings adopted by military forces, or for its slightly better ballistics. As Cooper wrote, a true scout rifle comes in .308 or 7mm 08. The .243 Winchester is an alternative for young, small-framed, or recoil-shy people, but need the 22-inch barrel. Cooper also commissioned a Lion Scout rifle chambered for the 350 Remington Magnum cartridge. Action. All of Cooper's prototype scout rifles were bolt actions. However, he did say if a semi-automatic action were made that was significantly compact and otherwise acceptable, it should certainly be considered. Cooper said that the Berno ZKK-601 action is the closest to those guidelines. A bolt action, two lug, 90 degree rotation was favored, as was the traditional Mauser claw extractor. The bolt knob should be smooth and round, not checkered, and positioned far enough forward of the trigger to avoid pounding of the index finger during firing. The safety should be positive and include three positions. It should disconnect the trigger mechanism rather than blocking it. It should be strong and positive and work front to rear, rear position safe, and forward fire. Trigger. Trigger should be smooth and clean and provide a crisp 3-pound release. Weight. An unloaded weight with accessories of 6.6 pounds was the number that he wanted to shoot for, with 7.7 pounds being the maximum acceptable. And just real quick here, all these numbers, when you read any of Jeff Cooper's stuff, it's all metric. It's going to be in kilos and meters and centimeters and all that. I don't know why he was an American. I don't know why he felt the need to use metric bullcrap for all of his measurements, but I converted it all to I'm going with the American numbers on this. I can figure out the metric system, but we're Americans here. We're going with the imperial numbers here. The length, an overall length of 39 inches or less. These two characteristics place scout rifle into the general class of carbines. Optics. A forward-mounted telescopic sight of low magnification. He does very specifically say low magnification, typically 2 or 3 power. This preserves the shooter's peripheral vision and keeps the ejection port open to allow use of stripper clips to reload the rifle, and it eliminates any chance of the scope striking one's brow during recoil. Cooper has stated that a telescopic sight is not mandatory. Reserve sights. Go-string auxiliary iron sights, a rear sight consisting of a receiver-mounted, large aperture, and typically a square post front sight on the receiver bridge and not on the end of the barrel, where it catches on things, breaks, snags, and muddies up. This allows the rifle to be accurately aimed at short to medium ranges, even if the scope becomes damaged. The stocks. Synthetic rather than wood stocks. Heel of the butt rounded to avoid snagging on the shirt. A spare magazine stored in the butt. A retractable bipod that does not protrude from the stock. Magazine. The magazine should be so constructed as to protect the points of soft point Spitzer bullets as they ride in the magazine. Some sort of magazine cutoff permitting the rifle to be used in single shot mode with the magazine in reserve. An alternative is to the magazine cutoff is a detachable box magazine with a double indent, which could be where the magazine could be inserted to the first stop, not allowing the bolt to feed cartridges off of the magazine, and then when desired, the magazine could be pressed into the second stop, permitting the bolt to pick up the top cartridge. Cooper also discussed the need to be able to use stripper clips to reload the rifle. The sling. A Ching or CW sling. Against common practice, Cooper did activate for the use of a sling as a shooting aid. The Ching sling offers the convenience of a carrying strap and the steadiness of a target shooter sling with the speed of a biathlete sling. The CW sling is simply a simpler version of the Ching sling, consisting of a single strap. I'm not actually familiar with these slings. There's another one. I mentioned it later on. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head. It's later on in the script. I'll talk about it. I'm not familiar with the Ching sling. If it has the third attachment point there in the middle in front of the magazine, I'm going to tell you right now, I am not a fan of those. My grandfather had them on his military rifles. I am not a fan. I find it snags on stuff. It gets in the way of stuff. I like just a simple 1-inch, maybe 1 1/4-inch, plain Jane leather sling. And I have no problem wrapping my arm through there quickly and getting a good brace on it. If you don't know how to do that, maybe I can do a video sometime on how to use a regular sling and wrap it around your arm. I am not a fan of the third attachment point on a sling in front of the magazine. I will say that right now, and we'll have to see how that goes further into this build. And then his final point on the scout rifle was accuracy. The rifle should be capable of shooting 2 MOA or less at 200 yards and be able to reliably hit a man-sized target at 450 yards with the iron sights. These features dictated short, thin barrels, synthetic stocks, and bolt actions. Other optional features included a retractable bipod, detachable magazines, a butt magazine, and an accessory rail for lights and other attachments. The addition of some of these features often render the rifle technically not a scout as originally defined, but this has come to be accepted by many as still conforming to the spirit, if not the letter, of the concept. Of course, even building a custom rifle, there are several things on this list that are hard to achieve, such as the stripper clip loading, being able to store spare mags in the stock, and built-in retractable bipod. I'm going to tell you right now, if I build this rifle on a left-handed action, I'm going to have trouble with that whole Mauser claw thing, because as far as I know, the only one I can think of off the top of my head who builds a rifle with a left-handed action and a Mauser style extractor is Ruger. And you're gonna, Rugers are heavy, and I'm gonna have to put that rifle in a synthetic stock in order to make weight. And nobody, and I mean nobody, makes a left-handed synthetic stock for the Ruger, for the big M77 actions, including Ruger. Ruger does not offer a synthetic stock for those rifles. I have not found a single manufacturer who manufactures a synthetic stock for those rifles. So either I'm going to have to go overweight, or I'm going to have to use an action that does not have that claw extractor. So just things to think about. I mean, these requirements for the Scout rifle are very difficult to meet. And even people who are big fans of the Scout rifle talk about these being hard to meet. I seem to remember watching an interview with, I think it was Richard Mann, and he was talking about it being hard to meet these requirements. So, anyway, in 1998, Steyr Mannlicher of Austria began producing the Steyr Scout, which is also known as the Mannlicher Scout. Jeff Cooper spent many years of reflection and working with Steyr before they began production, built to the specifications developed. The Steyr Scout features a built-in bipod as well as storage for a spare-loaded magazine. The rifle is also designed to allow either single-shot, manually loaded fire, or normal magazine feeding. Dang, this is what happens when I get into a subject I'm actually interested in. I start talking, and I spend more time talking than I do smoking my cigar, and it went out on me. I just had to stop and relight it here, which is never a very fun time. Anyway, from what I've read and understand, Cooper considered the Steyr to be the end-all, be-all when it came to the Scout rifles. But I do have a few things I tend, at this point in time, I do tend to see a couple of things differently on the Scout rifle concept. Cooper talks about the 90-degree bolt throw, and I find this to be a little bit silly myself, as I've run a lot of bolt-action rifles, and I really like the shorter 70-degree bolt throws seen on a lot of modern sporting rifles, and I don't see why something like with a straight pull action wouldn't be fantastic for a Scout rifle either. Savage just started making a straight pull bolt action. I may look into one of those for my Scout rifle build in 308, because those do come in left-handed. But I do especially like the shorter bolt throws, especially as a left-handed shooter. If I'm running a right-handed rifle and I have to do drop the butt of the gun and reach over the top of the receiver, the shorter bolt throw makes that all the easier for a left-handed shooter. I fully intend to give the Scout rifle and the Scout scope a solid try with this project, but I feel like scopes, at this point in time, I feel like scopes have come a long way since Jeff was messing around with them, and at this point, I haven't found a Scout rifle yet that I've gotten to shoot that I really felt like it handled and balanced naturally for me, but I've also got to admit, I've never owned a rifle with the forward-mounted scope, and I may come to like it with use. One of the reasons for the forward-mounted scope was because Jeff wanted to be able to use stripper clips, but that's just not really a thing in 2023. I don't even remember the last time I saw a stripper clip. Like, when I was a kid, I remember going to the gun shows, and you could buy, like, 30-06 and 8mm Mauser ammo and stripper clips in the gun shows, and I haven't seen that in ages, and I'm not even that old, I'm only 29. Stripper clips just aren't a thing anymore in 2023. Not saying they couldn't be, and I'm not saying it's not a good idea to be able to quickly top off the magazine like that, but it's just not a thing. I don't you know, like, even like, you know, you can buy speed strips and stuff, revolvers, speed loaders, that kind of stuff. I don't know. I haven't seen a stripper. As I was saying, I have not seen a stripper clip for sale in quite some time. The other thing with the extended eye relief scope allowed for better peripheral vision. But again, scopes have come a long way since then. And traditionally mounted scopes with a true one power are very easy to shoot with both eyes open and get good peripheral vision. As far as optics go, so far, I tend to lean towards LPVO and something like a 1-6 is what I have on most of my rifles. Lightweight, compact, but 6 power, I mean, still more than adequate for a general purpose rifle out to 400 yards. You know, the kind of rule of thumb is for a rifle like this is 1 power per 100 yards. So, you know, 600, you know, that with that reasoning, a 6 power scope is good out to 600 yards. I don't generally shoot those kind of rifles out that far, you know, little carbines. But I do shoot long range, you know, 600 yards plus with rifles that are set up for it. I also like to be able to put flip caps on my scopes because, you know, we get up here where I'm at, it gets extremely dusty down here with the wind blowing through the river valley, and I like the flip caps. And having flip caps that can be opened with the thumb while in the shooting position is nice, but it's not really doable with the scout scope setup. But that's not the end of the world, and not everybody likes scope caps. Actually, when I scoped my 375 Ruger, when I got that rifle, I kind of kept it along the lines of a heavy scout, or I think Jeff Cooper called it a Dragoon scout. Overall, the Ruger M77 that I have is 40 and a half inches long and weighs 10 pounds, 5 ounces with the Vortex PST Viper 1-6 on there, a sling, and a full magazine. It's a little on the heavy side, but it's a 7-pound 375 would be brutal to shoot, especially the 375 Ruger, which the way I hand load it is no slouch. I think I'm pushing 250 grain Barnes TTSX. At over 2,800 foot per second out of that rifle, it would be brutal in a 7-pound rifle. It's not fun to shoot in a 10-pound rifle. It would be brutal on a 7-pound rifle. But I find that this rifle set up this way is just about perfect for my everyday needs as a hard-hitting gun here in Alaska. Another thing for me in the scout rifle is that I shoot rifles left-handed, and I mentioned that a little bit ago. And there are not many left-handed rifles out there. Steyr was supposed to build their scout rifle left-handed per Cooper's request, but did not due to the cost restrictions on it. I will say this, the forward-mounted scope actually does offer some benefit to the left-handed shooter that runs a right-handed rifle with the firing hand, since when you drop the butt of the rifle and tip the gun, the scope's not in the way of working the bolt. Usually I'm a big guy. I don't run the rifle with my strong hand. I run it with my support hand, tilt my head back, run the bolt with my left with my right hand, and then get back on the front of the gun for the shot. But I could see where the scout rifle or the scout scope could be handy for the reach over the action, and I have done that on iron sighted rifles. You know, and you pair this with a modern short bolt throw, you know, 70-degree bolt throw or a shorter bolt throw, and it may be nearly as fast to run as a proper left-handed rifle. I'd have to play with it a little bit. Either way, I will build my scout concept rifle on a left-handed action because the rifle is for me, and I prefer left-handed rifles. This was actually, this wasn't always the case. The first left-handed rifle I bought was a Ruger M77. I'm a big Ruger fan. I like Rugers, and it was in 270. And I got it used, I got it cheap because it was a left-handed rifle and nobody wants left-handed rifles. And I hated it. I've shot right-handed rifles my whole life and I found it to be awkward, especially loading. I've gotten so used to holding the rifle in my left hand and just pushing cartridges into the top of the magazine with my right thumb that it was extremely awkward to load. And I was just, you know, and like I said, I've been shooting right-handed rifles for the first 25 years of my life. I found the left-handed action to just be too awkward, and I sold it. I sold it rather quickly, and it was a couple years before I tried another left-handed rifle, and that was a Savage 22 with a detachable magazine. But I still found the rifle a little bit awkward and stuck to right-handed rifles until just a couple years ago, actually, and that Ruger 375 was actually, when I moved back up here to Alaska, I bought that rifle. And I bought it left-handed because I thought it might be worth getting used to the left-handed action for quicker work in the bush. And once I got used to it, I came to prefer it. And I've actually sold pretty much all my right-handed rifles now, except for one, and replaced them with left-handed rifles. For me, when I think of a general-purpose rifle, I think of a truck gun. A rifle that is capable of handling everything from killing small game to moose. Short, so it doesn't take up much room. Accurate and fast handling. Real quick on the accuracy, I will say I'm kind of an accuracy snob. If a rifle won't shoot, and this includes some of my big guns, if a rifle won't shoot one MOA, it doesn't stick around here. I'm a big accuracy snob, so we'll have to see how the scout rifle thing goes. I know Jeff talked about the 2 MOA. I'm sure I can get a 1 MOA scout rifle built. And this is shooting handled. I don't expect any rifle to shoot MOA with off-the-shelf ammo. But we'll just have to see how that goes. You know, but like I said, you know, short, doesn't take up much room, accurate, easy handling. I do think the 308's a great cartridge option for this. Up here, I think the 358 Winchester would be a great option too. But as I stated earlier on, I may build the first scout rifle in a lighter chambering so I can afford to shoot it more and use it and really get a good feel for the scout rifle and give honest thoughts about it. But we'll just have to kind of see how things go here. If I do build it in a 308 right off the bat, I'm leaning towards using a Tika T3 or a T3X because of how light they are. Building a 6.5-pound rifle fully kitted is a very difficult weight to achieve. You know, I've been around rifles my whole life. My dad built guns. I built guns when I was a teenager. That I'm telling you, that 6.5 pounds with a scope, sling, and all the goodies is a tough weight to achieve. So we're going to have to start with something very light. I have a Tika T3X, super light, 6.5 Creedmoor, 24-inch fluted barrel, and it's topped with a Vortex Diamondback 4-16. Diamondback Tactical 4-16, I'm sorry. The sling, loaded magazine, and all that, and it weighs 8 pounds, 9 ounces, which makes it a great snowshoeing rifle, which is kind of what I intended it for when I bought it. And I like the Tika rifles. Another option might be the Ruger American because it's a little bit more budget-friendly, although it's usually heavier than the Tika or a similar rifle. For a similar rifle. Of course, neither of these rifles offer the Mauser-style clock extractor, but like I mentioned before, not very many left-handed rifles do. Before I wrap this up, I want to talk about one other thing real quick, and I kind of touched on this on the start, but it needs touched on again. After I came up with the idea for this episode, I posted on the Jeff Cooper Scout Rifle Facebook page, and I learned something real quick. If you put a rifle together and put it on that page in any way, shape, or form, it varies from Jeff Cooper's guidelines I talked about before. The fan base of the scout rifle tends to get upset and make it known that it is not a scout rifle. And that's okay. I get that. A true scout rifle isn't for everybody. I've always said I prefer a low-power variable scope. And, you know, other variances on my rifles, but I'm going to build the rifle. I plan to build this rifle, a scout rifle, as closely to the original concept as possible and shoot it a bunch to either decide I actually do like it or decide I still like things a bit different and be able to give solid reasons why. However, that being said, from here on out, I will try to use the term practical rifle when I'm talking about anything that varies from Cooper's original concept. According to Randy Kane, a practical rifle is lightweight, compact, and quick handling, viable from extreme close to intermediate ranges of, you know, 300, 400 yards, bolt action or lever action, default caliber of 308 but dependent on situation, low power variable scope, red dot or iron sights, a Ching sling or other rapid loop sling. And that's it. These guidelines leave a lot of play for personal touches on a rifle and not the strict and hard-to-meet requirements of a scout rifle. I should also mention another thing that came up during the scout rifle discussions was taking a designated scout rifle training course at Gunsight or somewhere similar. And I just don't see that happening at this point. I'm not saying it wouldn't be useful or that I wouldn't learn something. I'm not in any way bashing Gunsight. I don't want to come off as that. I think Gunsight's a great place for a lot of people. And I would love to go there somewhere someday, but at this time, I just don't think my budget probably isn't going to allow for it. And I also, I have a pretty fair grasp on how to use a rifle. You know, I've been wandering around Alaska shooting rifles, you know, for 20 plus years on a daily basis. My dad owned an ammunition manufacturing company. When I was a kid, I had unlimited ammunition, and I hand load all the things. Now I pretty much shoot on a daily basis. I'm pretty familiar with a rifle and what I think a rifle should do. And you know, that might change. You know, towards the end of this podcast, I might change my mind and I might try to set up something and go to a training class, but I just don't see it happening with the budget and time. Anyway, I'm thinking this should make for an interesting series, and I look forward to learning more about the Scout Rifle and sharing with the listeners. Alrighty, guys. Well, this pretty much sums it up for this episode. Unfortunately, we don't have a gear review again this week. And we'll just, I was hoping to do gear reviews each week, but we'll just have to see how often I can find things to review in the future. If you guys have any comments for the show or ideas of things to talk about, feel free to send an email to dansgunstuff@gmail.com or get a hold of me on any of the social media platforms I'm on. Instagram is probably the best for trying to keep up with my current projects and comings and goings, but I will try to be better about posting things on the Mountain Man Dan Show Facebook page as well. I'm thinking about trying to get the YouTube channel going again. And this time of year, I have time for that kind of stuff. In the summer, when I'm working, I don't. So we'll just kind of have to see how much time I have to deal with that. I'd like to, but we will just have to see how that goes. Next week, we might talk about this Tika T1X rifle I picked up and I'm really starting to like this rifle. But then again, last week, I named off a couple of topic ideas for this week, and I didn't do any of them. So we'll just have to see how this week plays out and what I decide is interesting this week. Anyway, thanks for tuning into the show. Be safe out there. And until next time, don't shoot yourself in the foot.